Funding for Roots, Race, and Culture is provided in part by the Norman C. and Barbara L. Tanner Charitable Support Trust and by donations to PBS Utah from listeners like you. Thank you.
Hey, my friends, you're listening to Roots, Race, and Culture, the podcast from PBS Utah.
If you like what you hear, we hope you'll subscribe, leave us a review, and share with your friends.
All right, now let's get this thing started.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Roots, Race, and Culture, where we bring you into candid conversations about shared cultural experiences. I'm Daner Gerald.
And I'm Lonzo Liggins. From Japan to Brazil, the process of outfitting cars with hydraulic lift systems, also known as lowriding, has become a global phenomenon. But its origins are right here in the United States, California and the Southwest United States, to be exact.
But there's more to these cars and the people who drive them than meets the eye. It's a tradition that is deeply rooted in Latino culture. These aren't just cars, they're a community. And some of that community is right here in Utah. We are so excited for this show, and thank you guys for joining us.
I'm thrilled about this. I'm telling you I'm excited about this. But I want you guys to introduce yourselves first. Go ahead, Connie.
Hey, my name's Connie Medina, and I'm vice president of Aswan Car Club, and I've been a member for about 6 years.
Oh, nice. My name is Nick Peck, and I own a small repair shop. I kind of a jack of all trades, but I cater to the lowrider community, not just in this valley, but outside as well.
Worldwide.
Wow.
Aswan's been around for a while. I know that because I was just talking to you guys before, and that was around when I was in high school. So here's the thing. I used to have a 1965 Chevy Impala lowrider myself. It was a chop top. It was teal. It was gorgeous. It had front, back, side to side. Some of y'all don't know what that is,
what?
But we're going to learn what front, back, side to side is today, right?
Yes. Wow. Do all of these cars have like lifts or something on them?
Not all of them, but some of them. Okay. Some are static. Some have air suspension, which is a little bit different.
Yeah.
That's another topic for another time.
Yeah. Right. No,
we can talk a little bit about it today, but it's part of embracing new technology, new things.
Yeah. And let's talk about the old stuff first, though, because there's a really rich history here.
Well, there's a big history behind the lowriders. We went into it, and we took a look at some of the interesting, fascinating past of lowriders. So there was an article in the Smithsonian Magazine and an article in the Phoenix Magazine that gets in the history of it. So apparently, the lowriding started with the Pachucos and the Zoot Suiters. So according to Richard Ochoa, he was the founder of the Mesa, Arizona-based Society Car Club. Any story about the history of lowriders must begin with the Pachucos. Between the 1920s and 1940s, the rebels and bad guys and the folk heroes were the bootleggers and the mafia dons. So they wore these expensive suits and they bootlegged booze in their trunks. And their weighted down trunks meant that they had, you know, this money and status. So the original Pachucos, they loved their style and they loved the style of the jazz musicians at the time. So many of the original Zoot Suiters wanted to stand out and they have like a style of their own. So they wore these big long suit coats and they had these big pants. So it was an act of anti-conformity, so they became like these folk heroes. But so many people in the Hispanic community began to believe the Pachucos were the serial bootleggers, and so to imitate them, they began to weigh down the back of their cars and to go against the white counterparts of the time, who had the fast cars that were raised up, so their cars were low and slow.
So tell me, what does that speak to you guys? Like
does that sound about right?
Tell us about.
Well, yeah, it sounds about pretty close to being right. I think the clothes was a little bit more of a to stand out as an individual and against it. Because a lot of Hispanic people, and in those times especially, looked a lot like their white counterparts if you're in something else. Right. You know what I mean? In regular daily wear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So wearing something that definitely makes you stand apart, I think that was a lot to do with it as well. Yeah. I'm not so sure about the origins of what attracted them to that style, right. Mm-hmm. But wanting to stand apart was the goal of that style.
It's the lowrider style. What about you?
It's the same thing with lowriders.
Just like Nick said, they wanted to stand out. And I've always heard that like it originated back in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Kind of like there was, when after the war, there was boneyards where there was the aircrafts. Mm-hmm. And they would go over there and get the hydraulics from the planes and actually put them in their cars to make them go up and down. And it just kind of became a part of history.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, there's this, and that's the thing is like, I read many different versions of the origins of it. You know, some of it was in L.A., some of it was in the Southwest, but they all like had different parts to them.
I believe it was in, I don't know the exact date, 1958. There was a guy, a gentleman by the name of Ron Aguirre.
Yes.
He had a car that was called, I believe, X-Sonic. It was a super, super modified car, and he'd adapted some aircraft hydraulics to lift and lower. Mm-hmm. Now, these times, everybody was what we call static lower, cannot lift or lower, you're just low. Mm-hmm. Everybody was at a parked car show, and there was some 2x4s and some wood lit up for everybody to go by. Ron pulls out, goes on the side of everybody, and they're all looking at him like, where's he going? What is he? Mm-hmm. Who does he think he is? Gets to the curb, hits a switch, and slowly raises his car, pulls up over the curb, then lays it back down on the grass, and go. And that just started
a
wildfire.
Right
yeah. It started with, what are you doing? Where did you get that? What is that? Yeah.
That's great. Well, this also was a really big part. They had the Zoot Suit Riots in the 1943 because a lot of the other counterparts were, a lot of servicemen were very upset and frustrated because they're like, there's this anti, they saw it as an anti-patriotism sentiment, and they thought, well, things are very lean right now. Why are you making these outlandish suits and wasting all of this material that's unnecessary? So it ended up really getting pretty crazy. And I know the jazz song Zoot Suit Riots, but really understanding the history of it, I had no idea until
we
started understanding.
So, that's right. So like, and then California, the police began to associate the cars with like the outlaws and the troublemakers. So in 1958, California Vehicle Code 24008 was passed. It outlawed any car on a public road that was lower than the bottom of the wheel rim. So soon after that, the hydraulic systems came in where they lowered the cars when the cops were, they raised the cars when the cops were around and then lowered them when they weren't there.
So now what I really found fascinating was how this history really speaks to the Chicano movement and to the Cesar Chavez, who had the immigrant movement. And so they were, was this used as fundraising? Like, how did it help to get those really civil rights movements going forward? Do you guys know that?
I don't know whether it helped as fundraising or, I mean, there was car shows that were thrown that maybe were part of fundraising, but I think it helped to keeping an identity of a group of people, and it gave people something to believe in, something to champion. You know, oh, this is our thing. This is us. This is our identity. This is something that's different. No, we're not. We don't have your hot rods. And this is our culture. This is how we customize. This is how we do it.
Yeah, and I wanted to hear about your car club. Speaking of which, because car clubs are kind of a unique part of lowriding. So with your car club, how does it how does it stand out? I mean, you obviously have, it's been around since 1983. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, we pretty much meet like once a month. We go to events. We try to be involved in community events, fundraising. We have people that call us for quinceañeras if we can take our cars so the girls can take pictures. We just pretty much interact with the rest of the lowrider community. We have families that they've been in it, their kids are in it, their grandkids are in it. Wow. I mean, we're all about unity also within the lowrider community and basically just helping out each other. Like if somebody gets in a car accident or somebody needs help with a medical bill or something, we'll just all come together, throw an event, and it's just all about unity with us. And
I love that.
Just being able to be family oriented and be out there. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're all about positivity.
Seems like that helps keep the kids out of trouble a little bit too, because they got something fun to do. And if you don't keep a kid busy, trouble's gonna find him, right?
We're all about keeping the kids off the street, keeping them busy. I mean, we have mentors, some of the older guys that have shops, own their shops, you know, can help the kids. Most of the kids, they start out with just like a bike, you know, painting a bike and then adding on other stuff. And we have the older guys that, you know, teach them and mentor them. And we have a Salt Lake Community College. We've teamed up with them, and we do shows with the community college just to get the awareness and the scholarship information and schooling available to everybody.
That's nice. Awesome.
Yeah.
So Nick, because I want to hear your histories. How did you guys get into this? I mean, tell me your story, your origin story. What started you in the low riding
world?
Well,
my grandfather was a mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always liked cars since I was my mother had me at a young age, so my grandfather and my grandmother raised me with the help of my mom, but she was 14, 15 years old when she had me. She was pregnant at 14. So my grandfather was a mechanic, so I was always in the garage with him, so I was fascinated by cars. You know, I was attached. He was my father figure. My biological father wasn't around, so my father figure was my grandfather. So I'm following him around the garage. Now, he was a... grew up in the Depression. Cars were for transportation, A, point A to point B.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, one time, I remember I was about 7 or 8 years old. We were on the front porch. It was a summer night, and some cars come caravanning down the street, some lowriders. Okay. And one of the cars had hydraulics. It laid out and just shot a shower of sparks.
That's cool.
And I was just like, I mean,
what was that?
Later, my grandfather told me, like, you were just like dumbfounded in awe. And he said, I knew at that minute that you were gonna ask for one or want one at some point in your life. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't want like lowrider bikes because I never, like me, I just rode a bike and I didn't have too many friends that had lowrider bikes, but I was into cars. I wanted a car when I was 9 years old. You know what I mean? I'm like, let's get a car. Let's buy a car. I want to fix this car up. And, you know, and that's kind of how it came about with me. Now, once I got older, I bought a 62 Impala. Was a four-door. I drove it to high school. I bought it when I was about 14 years old. Uh-huh. It needed some work, and my grandpa helped me work on it, and that was what... where I started with mine.
So you must have had the coolest car in high school.
Oh, I don't know about that. It was nice, but there was a few guys that had some nice cars too.
Yeah. How about you, Connie?
Where it all started with me and low riding is I had a 3-month-old little girl that passed away. So that was like 13 years ago. Probably 6 years ago, I ended up getting a really good deal on a car. I have a 67 Fastback. And it just kind of brought me and my family together. We met up with our car club, became a part of it. And it's really helped me with like my depression, anxiety. And so it helps to have that lowrider family. You know, if I'm feeling depressed or down, I'm just like, let's go for a cruise or meet up with me. And, yeah, you know, you could call anybody up at any time and be like, hey, do you guys want to cruise and meet me at the gas station or something, meet me downtown. So it's really helped me with that.
See, and that's the negative thing that people think about lowriders. When people see a group of people driving down the street, what are the first impressions you think that come into people's minds?
I think we've gone a long way since there was some really bad. And what tells me that is when I was young, when I was in high school, we'd get pulled over by police and harassed, searched. That doesn't happen now. So things have changed a lot. But group people that don't know, they might think, oh, they're in a gang, or this is that, the style of dress, the you know, the way you carry yourself. You know, they may think that, but anybody that thinks that, and when they come to one of our events or something, they're going to change their mind.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of stereotype from people, individuals, but I think it's gotten a lot better as of today. You know, people don't see us as troublemakers or, you know, I mean, we're about family. So I'm glad that there's the awareness and stuff, and we encourage anybody to come to our events and see what the low riding's about.
Are there a lot of women in the low rider community? I mean, I know it's a family oriented thing, but I mean, you're vice president of your car club. That seems like a big deal.
I think back in the day that the women were mostly, you know, they was there to help their husbands or be there to support them building their cars. And it's actually came a long way. Now you got girls that have their own lowrider car clubs.
Nice.
There's one in LA, it's Lady Lowriders, and it's nothing but females. There's a lot of girls out here that have their own cars. Like, they don't want to be standing there helping out. They want to be cruising.
They want to be in the passenger seat. They want to be in the driver's seat.
They want to have their own cars. They want a three-wheel. They want to learn what to do. And it's really exciting because, you know, to see the girls out there working on their cars. I have 6 lowriders. So,
six.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Which ones you got?
I have a 67 Fastback, a 62 Impala, 78 Monte Carlo, 2001 Lincoln, a Cadillac, and I just got a 1952 Chevy Bomb.
Wow. Yeah. You started working on the Chevy already? Or?
It's done.
It's done.
That sounds expensive. Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of cars. Just like tallying up those numbers in my head. I'm like, that's 20.
I look at it as an investment. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. the value of the cars are going to just continue to go up. And so it's an investment. It's a hobby. It's something that I enjoy.
So is there buying and selling? Because it seems like that's a great way to teach young people investment. And
there definitely is. That's part a big part of my business is mm-hmm. buying and selling of cars, car parts, hard to find parts. Yeah. I supply parts cars to guys in LA that are big time suppliers of used parts.
Got it.
Yeah. And so I go to all over like the Eastern United States because the Western United States has been picked pretty clean of mm-hmm. pristine mm-hmm. cars. So, yeah. I mean, like currently we're working North Dakota, we're working, you know, it's areas that you work and kind of bam and just, you know, whatever pops up, but yeah. That's about where I'm at. That's the closest thing that I'm finding now. But there's a lot of commerce that comes with it.
I think there's a lot, it's got to be beneficial for kids too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because kids got to get a lot out of this because I've heard, I was reading an article you were talking about kids get like STEM benefits from it, you know, like the science, technology, engineering, mm-hmm. mathematics. Can you tell us about that?
Well, there's just, yeah, there's definitely room for kids like in the automotive tech programs and stuff in their high schools, that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. for sure. There's programs. They've unfortunately, like here in Utah, like in the high schools, that's shrunk quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, watching the way the world is going, trades, I'm on the road a lot, so I listened to a thing the other day, and they're talking about in 7 years, we're gonna lose 45% of our workforce to retirement.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
That isn't gonna get replaced right away.
Okay.
So there's definitely some programs, you know, that are out there that people need to take advantage of and start thinking about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of kids don't get into the automotive repair or the auto body stuff these days. They're just more into YouTube and like TikTok. And how can I do things that are, you know, just the quick buck, but you know, going out there and learning a trade, there's good money in it.
Yeah.
It saved your life.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it did a lot for you and it helped to turn things around. Do you see it changing other people's lives when you're out there and involved with the car club?
I do, and if I see somebody or a kid or, you know, even like the girls, they'll be like, wow, look at her, you know. It's like, hey, come on, let's go cruise. Or it's just, I think the passion for the low riding, like, it's not only helped save me, but it helped save my son. Mm-hmm. He's also into low riding, and he has the 62 Impala. So, you know, it's like, he can work on that. Yeah,
my son Mateo. Mateo's rolling in the 62?
Yeah.
How old's Mateo?
He's 22.
I wish I had a 62 when I was 22. I think I had an 83 something.
Yeah.
That wasn't nice.
And I think it just helps. Like the kids, when they come out to the events, they see, oh, wow, you know, or the flashy rims, the paint jobs. And it encourages them to want to be a part of, hey, can you teach me? Or even if they're in high school and they wasn't a part of auto body, they're going to think about it and be like, hey, you know, maybe I should, you know, get an auto body or think about it being a trade or a skill.
Well, we got a video here of the cars bounce, because I want you guys to tell me about why is this? Why do the cars bounce like this? We're going to go ahead and show it, because I think kids, I was into this when I first saw it. So tell us a little bit about this, guys.
I know that car really well. I did a lot of work on that car.
Uh-huh.
So that has 14 batteries in the trunk, 2 pumps to the front, 2 pumps to the rear. It's what you would call a double pump. It's a 63 Impala.
Now,
fully reinforced frame.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I see that they're measuring. There's like, is that like a? It's like
that's inches. Yeah,
to see who can
it's
bounce
inches
the
to see who the highest. It's competitive. I competed in the late '90s, early 2000s with the Lowrider Magazine Tour.
Wow.
I'm a two-time world champion, one-time national champion. I set 7 world records.
What?
Wow.
Yeah, that's my thing right there.
Yeah,
is
the bouncing?
The hopping is the thing, yeah, hopping.
What is it? So what does it take to get it to bounce like that? Because in my 65, I would try to get it to bounce. I couldn't get it to bounce at all. I would just, because I had the front and back. So yeah, explain to our audience what because there's different ways the car
technology
can do it. It can go front, back, side to side, and
three-wheel
motion.
Tell us.
And
right.
It can go like pancake and then bounce. Yeah.
So, I think Nick's the expert on that.
Okay.
Yeah, he's
so,
the one.
Like that that car right there is not. It doesn't do side to side. It's yeah. it's set up competitive.
What's the difference between
side to side? Number of dump valves.
Okay.
Number of. I mean, that car has four pumps, but the front pumps are teed to one dump valve in the front.
Now, what is the, so yeah. That's not the motion of it.
No, it's just one. Both pumps are plumbed straight to the front cylinders.
Gotcha.
Four
so
lift.
Can bounce.
Four, yeah, four
so
lift.
So when it goes side, so when they go, so the side to side, and the car goes from one yeah. side to the other side, and then front yeah. and back, and then the three wheel motion is when one.
Yeah,
wheel
one. Now that car
up.
Will three wheel. He has independent rear corners in that car.
Yeah. Is it hard to drive like that?
Well, it's a different look.
What's your favorite part of cruising, Connie? Do you like the bouncing?
No, I'm not a bouncer. I'm not a bouncer. I mean, people. They ask me, you know, we'll be cruising. I'm like, no, I don't have hydraulics, you know. Not yet.
Yeah. Mateo's getting them.
We're trying to convince her.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
They want me to get it on my 67, so we'll see. But
so do you just pancake or?
No,
well,
I just
she's
cruise.
Just static, but she
yeah.
has, her car's really, really, really nice. Her car is
beautiful.
It's beautiful pattern. Like the paint job on her car is, it's primo. It's really
well,
nice.
It's like a global phenomenon, you know, low riding. It goes around the world. Like when
we're
doing the research,
sure.
we're seeing stuff in Japan. You know, in Japan they've got big car shows. We're seeing stuff that was in Brazil.
Sweden,
Australia. Wow. Yeah.
I actually have customers in Japan. Yeah. Japan, they are that thing. Japan has always been a culture that they have their old school identity, their roots like that. But they're younger. They're kind of identityless. So they've picked up from like. Motorcycles, the lowriders, and when they pick up the culture, they don't pick up just the cars or just the motor. They pick up the wear, the hairstyles, the whole nine.
Well, speaking of culture, when these cars are created, some of the pictures that I've seen, they have a lot of the detailing that's done on the cars. It's very much a representative of that culture. Like I see like Aztec type stuff. Mm-hmm. Is that really a part of it? Like, you know, when it comes to creating a lowrider from scratch, when you're creating the interior, when you're creating the exterior, is it a way to stamp your culture on the car as well?
Well, yeah, just like what you said, there's from Aztec murals to, I mean, you have black car clubs in African American black car clubs in LA mm-hmm. that have like, you know, civil rights movement things muraled on their cars. The theme to their cars is like that. Yeah, of course, everybody wants to put their culture with it for
well,
sure.
It's been a big part of hip hop culture. You know,
yes.
A lot of guys have rapped and sung about that. Do you feel like that was good or bad for low riding?
I think it's kind of a little of both. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think like the rapping, the music videos and stuff. They pretty much wanted the lowriders, you know, a different look. So they incorporated the lowriders. And then I think it could be either good or bad. I mean, you have the younger generations, the kids that see, you know, the rapping, the pretty much just like the flashy stuff going on. And some people may portray to stereotype it. Right. But I mean, it's not all that everybody thinks.
90% of lowriders in music videos are in gangster rap genre, hip hop genre.
Right.
So there's your implication right there, gangster rap.
And that's what I'm saying. Like a lot of people might associate, well, those are guys who are just like the dudes in the videos, but it's not. You guys are family.
But the thing that it did good for lowriding is when gangster rap, hip hop, when that broke underground and became mainstream, guess what it brought with it?
Lowriders. Yeah, I mean, we got Ice Cube. And this was Boys in the Hood, right?
Mm-hmm.
This was his, he said, what kind of car does he got, Nick?
That's a 63 Impala.
63 Impala, it's like gold.
Convertible.
I remember that was, when I saw that on that movie, I mean, even before that, I remember there was a song that came out from Eazy-E, Cruising Down the Street in My
6'4".
My 6'4", and I was like, what is a 6'4"? I remember I was like 12 when I first heard that song, and I was determined to figure out what a 6'4 was. And that's pretty much the same car that he has right there is that Impala. It's 1 year earlier. But I feel like that kind of became a lot of people's entryway into low riding was rap music, you know? And I know it was mine, and from there, it seems like a lot of kids connect with low riders via rap music.
Right.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between, because you talked about there's like black car clubs in LA, and then there's Latino, obviously, which is the roots of low riding. So is there a lot of like connection between clubs around
sure.
the country?
How many racial groups in Salt Lake are there?
Everyone. Every racial group we have in Salt Lake has a representative of
in the low riding
community. Yeah. Every walk of life, every Every church, every station in life.
I'm gonna ask you the big elephant in the room question.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any white people the low ride?
Yes,
like,
of course.
Rich white people?
No. Yes, of course.
Like
I bet you.
Wow, that is awesome.
Yeah.
That is great.
One of the guys, he's currently got a really nice ice cream truck that's in the in the community, but he owns probably the most prestigious barber shop for sure in Salt Lake, and if not in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And he's I don't know what you call rich or wealth, but he's well to do. He lives a comfortable lifestyle. He's a good friend of mine. Okay. He's had several lowriders, and he's a good guy.
And he's down for the culture.
Mm-hmm. Down for it, yes, for sure.
That.
Everybody is from, like I say, every walk of life. We've got guys that don't have, that you know are sacrificing, don't have the nicest, flashiest car,
yeah,
but you know they're sacrificing to get that, all the way up to several prominent business owners that have good businesses here in the in the valley that are into lowriding.
We'll get back to this conversation on Roots, Race, and Culture in just a moment.
PBS Utah is also home to other dynamic podcasts. More Than Half covers some of the most challenging issues facing women in Utah and how it takes all of us to make change happen. Here's a clip from the episode, A Separate Space.
I don't think a lot of people realize that it's just not common for people of color, especially women of color, to see themselves in the stories that, you know, we're reading.
Subscribe to More Than Half wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, back to Roots, Race, and Culture from PBS Utah.
So let's go back to the car clubs. Connie, tell me about like a typical, like first of all, how many car clubs do you know that are here in the Valley? Like, if you were to guess.
Probably about right now, 30. We have about 30.
Wow, there's that many
different
ones. Yeah,
within the last 2 years, we've grown a lot of new car clubs. So, I mean, that's a plus for us because it's just growing our community.
Now, is there a specific thing that you have to sort of like, your car has to do this or be that to be in a lowrider club?
Well, each car club has their own standards, their own, you know, there's some guys like me, it's got to be cut. Cut is slang for having hydraulics. It has to be cut. Yeah. To me, I don't, you know, I'm just an old school traditionalist with that.
That's cool.
You know, so if I, you know, my club, that's how it would be.
Yeah.
You have to be cut. There's no stock cars. There's no place for that for me.
Gotcha.
Now, everyone else has their own different rules.
So if you haven't put any work into it, it's
in
just because
you bought
the car.
They won't accept your Toyota RAV4. Your RAV4 is out.
But and that doesn't mean that side of it is bad. That's just my personal preference.
Each car club has their own standards. Like, you have to do so much work to your car each year, or you have to keep it up, or you have to have the chrome undercarriage, or just a bunch of different things. There's other car clubs, you know, that are a little bit more relaxed of what you need to do, but just taking pride in your car, cleaning it, keeping it up.
So, like, you guys all see in some of these videos and that we watch, there's a what we call a plaque in the back window.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So that's your club, that's your moniker, that's your logo, that shows
that's
your club, that's who you are.
Flag on your
now,
porch.
In order, each one of these clubs have a standard in order to fly that plaque. So just because I got a 83 Buick Regal like Lonzo had, and I got some work done to it, doesn't mean that I'm plaque worthy, but it's not just the car that you earn the plaque with most of these clubs, it's you as a person have a prospect period where they fill you out to see if you fit within their club. Because like anything, we're humans.
Right.
Certain humans don't get along with other humans.
Right.
You know what I mean? It happens.
And do clubs have, you know, beyond the cars and those sort of things, do some clubs have like specific missions or specific goals that they're already, like you mentioned, the girls club in LA or women's club?
Well, we have, Utah's pretty unique. We're a smaller community. We have a lot of cars and stuff, but we all come together. We have what's called the Utah Riders Association.
Okay.
So that's that umbrellas all of us.
Oh, very.
And we meet regularly in the off season. It's easy to meet in the regular season. We talk when we're at events, but you know, Utah, unfortunately, you can't low ride year round. But we meet in the off seasons and discuss issues and stuff comes up. You
for
know,
the community like to, for,
we do. We
example?
Do community. We do like Toys for Tots drive. Each club does their own thing, but we do Toys for Tots, Connie was actually involved with the Penny Project.
Yeah,
that's another one.
There's the Penny Project. It helps like the youth. Connie's the founder of it, Connie Montoya. But I mean, it helps like the youth that are struggling. It helps mentor them and take them places. It helps them with skills. There's also the families of Fathers and Families of Coalition with Frank. I actually have been doing a toy drive in memory of my daughter for like 4 or 5 years. And we just picked different like primary children's, the Road Home, the Youth Center, and just pretty much give back. And the community, all the car clubs take part of it too. So we get together and pretty much say what we want to do like for the next year, what we want to be a part of, and just kind of let everybody know.
That's so amazing to think about that. You know, when you see this crew of lowriders driving down the street, there's so much more that meets the eye than just the cars. Yeah. There's all of these events that are happening. There's these fundraisers. There's a lot of community upliftment that's happening from that.
Oh, yeah, feeding the homeless. That's turkey drives.
So I mean, besides the fact that it's just cool, I mean, I remember we left an event where we won an award for the show, and
we won this award.
No. Like, it was just, that's the only way only reason I remember, other than the fact that I went downtown, I left the hotel, and there was this lowrider club cruising by, and they, you know, they were playing their music, and I was like, am I still in Utah? This is amazing, because I'm from Texas, man. You know what I'm saying.
It's big over there in Texas.
Yeah, so it was so cool, but it just sparked my curiosity. I wanted to know, who are these people? What are they about?
Let me ask you guys a question. Let's say I come in, I go, Nick, I got my 83 Buick Regal. let's talk money here, right? So, I mean, what does it cost to get one of these things off? Like your average lowrider that you see that's like up on this, like that we were watching on the screen, that's bouncing and jumping around like that. What does something like that cost?
It's a considerable investment. I mean, depending on how much work you're putting in yourself, that's the thing. Most of the lowrider community are really hands-on. So they're going to be putting in a lot of the work themselves. It's just like restoring, you know, a hot rod or restoring one to original, and it incurs some costs. I mean, a Buick Regal to get, that's what we call G-bodies. That's the name. That's like it's a G-body. It's not negative. It's a G-body. That's what they are. They're a G-body. So that's the actually GM's code for them, the size and denotes. Okay. Yeah. So like Chevelles and stuff, for example, they're A-bodies.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But this is a G-body. So this is that denotes that series of GM cars. Okay. So like Buick Regals, Cutlasses, Monte Carlos, those are all what you consider a G-body.
Kind of the same frame.
So same frame. Yes, exactly. Same platform.
Okay.
So, I mean, something like that would cost, I mean, anywhere between, depending on what you find the car for, you know, 8,000 up to, I mean, you start putting the money in them, they're 30,000-40,000.
Wow. And you can make money at those car shows.
Yeah.
Right?
There's prize money. There's
that bounce club.
Yeah.
I want to get in the bounce club and win that one, man.
I think the G bodies over the last 2 to 3 years have, like, their value.
They've doubled.
Up.
Yeah, for sure.
Really?
Yeah.
COVID had a really rare effect on the auto industry.
Okay.
Low riders.
You could get a used car, but it was as much as a new car for a while there after COVID.
Well, yeah, and it just freed up. I think a lot of people during COVID, a couple things. You weren't going out to restaurants. Mm-hmm. You weren't going on vacation.
Yep.
So all of a sudden you're sitting there at the end of this little thing, and you're like, I got this money saved up.
I got this 83
interest
Buick.
Rates were low. You could refinance, HELOC. You know what? When I was a kid growing up, I wanted to see. I grew up on cruising down the street in my 6.4. I'm going to get one. I'm going to buy one. Mm-hmm. And they just, prices exploded. It just.
The demand just.
And I think just, you know, sitting there, you know, the whole world was kind of, you know, staying still and, you know, staying in one place. So you're on your phone or on your computer or on the TV. You know, you're looking, this is for sale. Well, I'm going to buy that. I ain't got nothing else to do. That guy will still ship it to me. You know what I mean? Trucking companies were going. So I think that had like a big thing to do.
So maybe the community has grown a little bit since then. It sounds like if a lot more people are
buying cars
and getting into it.
So we're seeing new people now in the community, rather than, like she said, it was kind of a generational thing.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that's my nephew, he's getting into it, or, you know, whatever. No, now we're seeing people that we don't even recognize, and that's awesome. You know what
so
I mean?
It's become more accepted. I feel like it's not as like back in the day when it used to be something that did have a negative stereotype attached to it. Nowadays, it seems like it's a little bit more like mainstream and it's not looked down upon as much, you know? Because I remember back in the day when I was driving around in my 65, I was getting pulled over left and right. I
mean, they were searching it. They were doing the whole nine,
yeah,
right?
I mean, it was getting impounded. I mean, I had a lot of issues with that. But now, you know, I feel like I see people riding around just like we were seeing that one on State Street, and you guys aren't getting harassed as much. It seems like people are more accepting. But there is that negative. There is a few people out there.
The connotation is still there.
It's still there. So what would you say to the people who have a negative stereotype about lowriding?
I would say come to our events, come and talk to us, and we're just like anybody else. We have families, we work, we, you know, a lot of our people that own vehicles or build their own cars, they're sacrificing themselves, you know, going without lunch, or they want to put their money into some rims or get a paint job, or, you know, so we're just like anybody else. Come to our event, come hang out, and I think we would change your mind.
Is there food there?
Yes, there's always food. There's always food.
Can I get some real Mexican food?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, you can get some authentic street tacos. I mean, there's going to be guys cooking their own.
Teriyaki chicken.
Yeah, there's everything. Yeah, teriyaki chicken.
It's the first show. I'm there, though.
Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo. Perfect.
Well, I was going to say, we've actually came a long way. We have the Lowrider magazine coming here on July 27th.
Nick was telling me about that. Yeah, tell us about that.
And that hasn't happened since 99.
So Lowrider is a really, for the audience members who don't know, Lowrider is a really popular Lowrider magazine. It's like, it's one of the premier magazines in the Lowrider community. It's been around for as long as I know.
1977.
Yeah, he's got the year. He's like 1977, July 12th.
He's the OG.
1977. No, that was year I was born, but yeah, but no, I mean, oh, dude, I just dated myself, but no, Lowrider magazine's been around since 1977, and actually, I think 2 or 3 years ago, it's no longer in print form, it's all, you know, electronic, online, and they've always done a tour, so Utah got back on the tour this year, July 27th, it's going to be a mountain expo.
Why now?
It's just, the whole movement is big right now, lowriding is growing, it's not just Utah where it's growing, it's like earlier when we were talking about, you know, like how women are coming, you know, having their own cars and stuff, lowriding mimics everything, like as far as equality and, you know, and women being more involved in everything from professions to everything. Lowriding is going to follow suit, and car culture is big, so lowriding is going to follow suit. Lowriders are going to get bigger. There's more demand for that kind of stuff. I think social media that we all have the ability to take footage and instantly post it.
Yeah.
I know. So I think it it's right there at your finger. I mean, you can't look at everything that's on Instagram, Facebook, all in, you know, in an hour. You couldn't look at it in a whole day what's posted.
I know. My kids ask me, well, I want to see a picture of this 65 Chevy Impala you had. And I was like, we didn't take pictures back then.
We didn't have a camera.
I was like, you had 24 shots and you were going to waste it on anything especially which was important.
And the camera that we have in our phone is so much more quality than what we had, the best camera then.
It's tech. It's all tech.
And you didn't pull a camera out at a party back then. If you pulled out a camera back then, they'd be like, what are you, an undercover cop? Or
what is going on with you?
So let me ask you this, Nick. You know, we asked Connie, I mean, you've been doing this your whole life. It's a legacy that connects you to your grandfather, to your family.
Mm-hmm.
If someone were to ask you, like, what does this really mean to you? What do you want people to walk away with? Give us, speaking from the heart.
Well, I mean, lowriding is how I feed my family. It's what I do for a living. And I'm blessed to do that. And some days are good and other times are bad. And my family, you know, my family is patient with me and they understand. You know, sometimes they're good and sometimes they're bad. But I'm happy with what I do. I got a big age gap. I got a 25-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old daughter.
Wow.
And they both love cars. They both are hands-on. They're both, I mean, the 4-year-old, this morning I was fixing one of our chairs came loose or something. I was screwing. My 4-year-old comes running up with her tool bag. I got got it, Daddy, come on, I'll help you. You know, and she gets upset if she doesn't get to help me. And she calls, because my shop is kind of in a, like a, it's like a, it's on an acre of property. She calls it the shop farm.
Cool. Nice.
So, yeah, it's.
So that's home for her, just
oh,
like
oh, yeah, that's
for
home.
You.
She loves, she knows years of cars. We'll be looking, like, if I'm on Instagram, and she just, she's, you know, kids are very intelligent and very, what they listen, she hears. Mm-hmm. She talks about years. Well, 58, that's a 58, Dad, that's a 59. And mm-hmm. she understands. And that's what I, the thing that I like is to see her amazement. Or when I hop a car, yeah. She's like, "Yeah, Daddy, you were jumping the car."
Nice.
You know, when she does that. I mean, we have a member of our community that he has an 8-year-old son that actually works the switch of the car. Yeah. Stands
wow.
it right up. It's
that's awesome.
Yeah,
man,
it's
that's
awesome.
Good. That's good, man.
I gotta say one thing here before we wrap up here. You know, one of the first things that happened when I came to Utah, you know, and my first job, like second or third day on the job, this guy comes up to me and he's like, "Oh, how long you been in Utah?" I was like, "Just got here." He's like, "Oh yeah, that's great, that's great. Except, you know, there's just so many Mexicans like moving here and taking over and that kind of thing." And I was like, wow, like this is the first time I've ever been anywhere where I felt like there was more prejudice against somebody else against me than me as a black person.
I always feel like when somebody says that, they're going to say that about my people when they're
that's exactly what I was thinking.
Right.
But here's the thing, like I'm just speaking from the heart and telling you the truth. Like, I mean, I looked at him and I was like, yo, man, I grew up in Texas. That's where I came from. Like, a lot of my good friends were Mexicans.
Yeah, there's a so, you know, bigger Latin
know
culture
saying?
There and Latin population.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, if you think they're wait till you go to Texas. I mean, come on. Like,
yeah.
Like, it was so bizarre. And so what I really love is that you're using your culture to transcend that. I mean, perhaps maybe, have you guys ever had any cooperative events with police? Or anything
oh, yeah.
like that?
Oh yeah, there's lowriders that go to like the
gang
the gang prevention, and like they have a convention every year, the gang task force.
Oh, mm-hmm. yeah.
And there's usually lowriders that are involved with that. I mean, there's leaders of our community that you know are we like I said we've no longer getting pulled over and harassed mm-hmm. and searched.
Yeah.
And that comes from
those interactions, right?
You know, policing ourselves at our events as well, and them not they notice. We don't have to get we're not getting called out to these car mm-hmm. shows. There's not a fight. There's not a argument. There's not, you know, we're
underage
and they understand that. Yeah. There's guys that work each car club, the presidents and vice presidents like her, mm-hmm. they work with their community leaders mm-hmm. and by default, yes, with police and mm-hmm. everything else. But I mean, everybody's with their, you know, their representatives, their congressmen and women, they're with their, with the mayor, you know,
awesome.
With people in office. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, if you see a group of those lowriders going through your neighborhood or you see them going, you know, down the street, it's one of the safest groups you're going to see because none of those guys or girls are going to put their cars in harm's way,
no,
in jeopardy's
no,
way.
No,
that's
of course.
Those cars are massive investments. They cost a
yes.
lot of money. No one's going to pull a gun out of that car and start shooting at people getting shot back. No, that's just not going to
no.
happen. And that's something that I think a lot of people need to know as far as stereotypes come when it comes to lowriders. But Connie, I'm curious, you know, as we head out here, same as Nick, you know, I mean, what do you want people to know about low riding and your life, you know, before we wrap up here?
I would say that it just helped me be a better person and helped me kind of show my son and my family, like my mom, my dad, like they'll come and they'll support us at our events. And, you know, it's just we're just one big family.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, anybody that wants to know about low riding, just come to one of our events, you know, just talk to us because we love what we do. We have passion for our cars.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you could ask me about my car. I didn't build it, but I could tell you everything about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what kind of paint, what kind of interior, who did it. So just come and talk to us. You know, we're more than willing to help and chit chat with you guys and
remind
show you guys around.
Sorry, remind us the name of the club.
As One Car Club.
As One Car Club. And what club are you a part of?
Because I have a business, it's hard for me to be part of a club.
Yeah.
So I just kind
of
stay.
What's the name of the business?
City Garage.
Yeah, and then there's the Facebook and Instagram. There's the Ultimate Lowriders, right?
Yes.
So there's a group on Facebook, Utah Lowrider Connection.
Yes.
Cool.
You can join that group. Usually people are going to be talking in the summer about upcoming events. You click on that group and you're going to see activity. I mean, it's like a swap meet. There's buying and selling parts. Mm-hmm. It's people showing their cars and talking about events. And
it's a good way to get.
It's a great place, yes, to get introduced to the community.
And different. There's tons of different cultures there too. Like you were talking about. There's car clubs. You have car clubs that are Polynesian car clubs.
Oh yeah.
Black car clubs. Hispanic. All different races,
and then there's multiracial
groups that are involved in the same club. So it's a great way to get involved and to get involved with other cultures as well.
Yeah,
to be able to see that.
One stereotype that I kind of think the lowrider gets is it's a Hispanic thing, and it may have its origins, but I don't want anyone to ever feel like, oh well, I'm not Hispanic, I can't be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. That's
cool. For sure. I mean, if you're a car person and you like lowriders, you're welcome. You're welcome at my shop. You're welcome at my events or whatever. And I know the same goes for anybody in this community. Nobody's going to say, oh, you're not Hispanic or you're not Polynesian. You're not, no, it's not that. You're a lowrider.
At that
point, you become a lowrider. You're not black. You're not white. Yeah. You're not Hispanic. You're a lowrider.
I think there's like everybody is just a part of it. I mean, we all love to cruise. We all love to lowride. We all have the same passion, which is building cars, cruising. We all take pride in our cars. I mean, people, they do their paint jobs, the graphics and everything. So it's kind of like an artist, takes pride in their work. And that's what all these people are. They're artists with their cars. If they have a vision, they can tell somebody. We have a lot of go-to people in the community. Like we have Nick does like the hydraulics. We have painters that we could refer you to, auto body people. If you want to know the go-to, just like even on the Utah Connection, people's always there. Who do I go to for a paint job? I actually, my husband passed away 2 years ago due to suicide, and he had a 2001 Lincoln. It was just stock. And I'm like, okay, I need to get this done, for my husband. So I painted it a candy pearl white. I did pinstriping. I did leafing. And I had this vision what I wanted. And the last part of it is to put a mural of him and my daughter on the trunk. And it's kind of like in a memorial type thing. But I had that vision and I just needed certain people to help me put it together.
We can't.
Wow.
Like side note of what we say in it. Not everybody that, Utah, when you were growing up, me and you were growing up, things were a little bit different. I think that's when we also got the counterculture of gangs. Mm-hmm. You see now in low riding events, guys that were sworn enemies that are friends, that are in the same club, that are, they're family now. Mm-hmm. That have looked beyond, what separate stuff there is there and found a positive with low riding. That's what one of the main takeaways with low riding that is great. You know what I mean?
That's phenomenal.
I think this is a great place to wrap it up.
Thank you for sharing that story.
Thank you for sharing that story. And that's, guys, this has been a really great show. Thank you so much.
And I would also like to say, if anybody has like the stereotype that if you guys are going to come to one of our lowrider events, we are a family friendly. We are no drama, no tolerance is accepted. And we stress that within everybody.
So
and our
kids are welcome.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody
yeah.
but Dana. Dana can't go wild ways. Take us out, Dana.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Roots, Race, and Culture.
Check out our website for more content, information about our guests, and other episodes. You can find all that in a bag of chips at pbsutah.org/roots.
And you'd be doing us a solid if you told all your friends about our show. But until next time, y'all, we are out.